Blog Talk Radio.
And I am starting off the show tonight. I just want to talk a little bit about that song. My son actually wrote that song. I'm very proud of him. And it is an original piece of music for the show and for the fall. It's called Falling Leaf. And he wrote that, and I put it on the show for him. So thank you, Danny. I hope you're listening. Part of me hopes you're not listening because you're in college. You're off playing with your friends instead of listening to your father's poetry show. But part of me also hopes that you are listening. And but thank you for the song. And it sounds like Bobby is here. You know why, Bobby? Because Bobby is a Marine. Even though she's not feeling well, she is going to just come and do this show anyway because she is tough all the way around. Right, Bobby?
Suck it up.
That's right.
Gut it out. Gut it out. No pain, no gain. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've been nursing a headache all day long, and it decided to just colonize over my right eye and stay there. And it's attenuated, but it's still there reminding me that I've spent the day with it.
Right. So, well, hey, you know, maybe our show's so popular, even the headaches want to come be part of the show, right? There you go.
Yeah, apparently so. But thank you for kicking it off. And, hey, thank your son for that beautiful piece of music just for us. That is really terrific.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's quite a talented young man. Has he published anything yet?
He just put stuff on YouTube. He actually has – I'm trying to get him – he wrote a really great piece of music that his – like a chamber ensemble, a string ensemble did at his school.
Uh-huh.
And I keep trying to get him to put it on his YouTube channel so I can put it on the show here, and he hasn't, but it's a beautiful piece of music. So he's on a couple of websites that he's written. He's actually had a couple of people ask him to write stuff for him. So he's getting there. He's a good composer. He wants to get into psychiatry. Which is great. It's a great, a needed thing, absolutely, these days. But I hope he does some with music because I do think he's got some talent there.
I think music has more therapy.
Right, exactly. You know what? I can't believe I didn't tell him that. Right, you want to be therapeutic for people? Put great music out there. How much more therapy is there than putting on some headphones and relaxing and listening to music? Let me tell you.
Yeah.
But anyway, we have all kinds of fun stuff to go tonight.
We got
and,
great stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I'm very excited to get going here. So why don't we get started?
Toward the end, I'd like to make a couple of announcements about our upcoming contest because
sure.
We know we all know what Phil really spins up things in the group for holidays, especially Halloween and Christmas. And so I planned months ago a really special contest for Halloween. So I will talk about it at the end of the show.
Oh, cool. Yeah, absolutely. And you have some special music you're going to play for the month of October as well, too, which we're excited about.
Work too. I found this gal, and I've already started organizing the contest. I'm really psyched about it.
Excellent. Yeah, no, October is my favorite month of the year for many reasons, so I'm excited about the shows, absolutely. And I am going to shamelessly plug myself. I finally have a book out called Conscious Energy, a book of my earlier poems. So I think it came out pretty good. You can find it on many countries for Amazon, and hopefully soon it'll be on Books A Million and Barnes & Noble and some other places, but I do have a book out there if anyone is interested. But with that said, let's get to some real poetry instead of my mindless dribble that I usually put out. And we have we're going to start with some from our last contest. We have three carryovers.
Right.
And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. I'll take it a little easy on you. I'll make sure I read the long ones for you, Bobby.
Well, while you're reading, I'm going to go to the kitchen and get my cup of tea.
Excellent. And before I do read, I'm going to invite our first guest. I think we have somebody on with us.
Excellent.
Anybody on with us now? Hey, Tom?
Yes.
Oh, Tom. Lovely.
Yes.
Tom is here. Excellent.
Outstanding.
Hey, Tom, I took a nap today, too, for this. Trust me, I can't stay up till midnight either, so.
Yeah. Oh, they had me on Headliners Ball. I didn't manage to fall asleep till 4 in the morning. That was just a complete catastrophe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, actually, I heard part of that. That was great. I tuned in this morning and was able to listen to some of it on, and you sounded great.
Oh, well, thank you.
Great stuff, man. I always like your stuff. Yeah, Headliners Ball. I'm glad that that type of show was out there. I got to do it a few weeks ago, and it was a lot of fun. But, yeah, that's great. Yes, up till, like, right, exactly. I get you. I actually went to sleep for mine and set the alarm for 12 o'clock so I could get up and do it and then go back to sleep again.
I totally understand. But my days of all night is long gone.
Yeah, exactly. My all-nighters nowadays are getting up five times to go to the bathroom.
Getting old is not for sissies. Getting old is not for sissies.
It absolutely is not, my friend. All right, let's get cranking here. I'll still read the first one for us. So this is from the last contest. It's by one of my new favorite writers. I'm glad she's participating a lot. This is by Truth Chills, called An Ode to the Woman Before Me. Oh, mother of my mother, have I disappointed you much? Do you think I have amounted to anything more than all the women before me in our long line of nobodies? I can say that I must have gotten the strength that I wield from a woman who knew how to swing a sword and carry her shield. I received compassion from a woman who knew how to set herself aside along with her pride and serve others' needs, whatever they may be. Likewise, I am a woman of virtue, as I am sure more than a few possessed. These women vow to never quit and always do their best. I am not very quiet. I speak my mind clearly. I make sure that everyone who has hurt me hears me. There are many things that I can give my ancestors credit for except one, and that is the giving and receiving of love. The one thing in life cannot be taught or faked. Whether you find it early in life or find it late, it is yours to acquire, and that's the truth of the matter. Love requires things that are flawed so that perfection can be made when two hearts meld into one. Love demands selfishness, so when times get hard, each will put the other first. In doing so, both will stay firm and steady with extraordinary abilities. So thanks again to the past women who gave me something, and to all the influence I've had since birth, but most of all to God, who allowed me to be birthed. End poem. Awesome, right, Truth?
Great read.
Thank you. And Thomas, since you are all rested up and ready to go, let's start with you.
There's a lot of recognition and respect for Roots and for how what has come before you shapes you in so many ways. And even though you have to acknowledge your own identity and center yourself and recognize that you speak for who you are, this really is a celebration of thankfulness more than anything I can think of to call it, right down to the very last line, you know. And but most of all, for God who allowed me to be there. It's a great poem of gratitude.
Yeah, great comment. I agree. You know, I think I take a lot of walks, and I think, I actually think of my band in college a lot, and I just think of that we're all still alive. You know, we haven't seen each other for 20 years, 25 years, but I just always feel like I'm still carrying on like that, you know, just that whole aura that we were. I just feel like I'm still kind of there, and everything that was me is still kind of there, so it's all still alive. And I do think about, you know, my ancestors sometimes too. Like I'm representing them. You know, I'm a part of them that still goes on. You know, and she went all the way back to, you know, the medieval days, right? There really, you have to have some sort of common, you know, some ancestor somewhere back that you came from that still, you know, is why you're here, right? You know, if my father never had me and I never had my son, and hopefully if he has kids and blah blah blah, you know. Those people would never be born. It's very interesting. And, you know, the way of finding love, I think, which she talks about here to me is just, you know, you have these things, you have these traits that you get from people. A lot of it can be physical, it can be mental, it can be a lot of things. But you still have to find yourself. You know, you're still you. And the love and the life that you live is not, you know, dictated by your people in your past. You still have to find yourself. So really well done, Truth. Great job. And Bobby, if you haven't fallen asleep on us yet.
No. I like that she's acknowledged something that not a lot of us think about, is that she is the sum of her parts.
Yes.
And where those parts started, if you dig into your family's past, you can see things that it's like dominoes. One will affect the next and will affect the next and so forth and so on. And not only are we the sum of our own decisions in lifetime, but we are the beneficiary, for better or worse, of the influences that our progenitors had on our parents and grandparents and so forth. I mean, and some of it's negative. Sometimes people learn magnificent life lessons from negative examples. I know I've been a beneficiary of a few of those from my mom. Watch this woman very carefully and do the exact opposite. Yeah, she acknowledges that not only is she her own person, but she is also a mélange of what has come before her and the people that she's interacted with, and this is it's we're a jigsaw puzzle. We're the part in the middle, and everything around us influences us. So this is a beautifully written piece.
Yeah, absolutely. She did a great job. I mean, when I first read this, it inspired me. I got to write something about this. Great job. All right, we're going to move on. So we get two more, and then we'll get to our new poems. Bobby, this is one for you, if you wouldn't mind, by Saragossa.
Oh, sure. Okay, we need a female voice here.
Absolutely.
So, Efforts and Winning by Saragossa. There was nothing overtly conceptual about the boy with the Tupperware hair throwing rocks at his younger sibling in front of a giant Jesus sign. Tired shoes crunched their way through gravel drives. Children of neighbors gather behind the volunteer fire station, divvying out the new litter of a stray pack, which was this day's talk of the town. Save that one, poor restricted soul, forbade to dare bring another filthy mutt into this house. Nudging his way towards the center of the pile, heartsick acceptance, he pleads with his pal, "Let me name your dog." End poem.
That was a great read. You're not sick. You're faking it. You sound great. I'm joking. But yeah, no, that was.
That's my head.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's not a great read. Awesome read. And I really love this. One of the things with the last contest was there's a lot of characters would develop. I remember there a lot of people developed characters. And that's what this was. And that was my comment on this, actually, is that this person really came up with some interesting characters. It's almost like you're in the middle of a novel somewhere. You just took out some, a little piece in the middle of a novel. And I thought that was just really great the way he kind of developed that. And it just made it very, very interesting, I thought. So I really enjoyed this by Sarah. And just the characterization, like I said, and the story way that she wrote this, I thought was great. Tom, what are your thoughts?
Well, I was sitting here sort of, perusing, I guess, this word's the imagery is using the, there's nothing overtly conceptual about the boy with Tupperware hair throwing rocks at his younger sibling in front of a giant Jesus sign. The way in which we have become sort of victims of our own consumerism, so that we end up being caricatures of ourselves in a way and still unwilling to learn the lessons that would really help us become better people. And then she shifts into these, the tired shoes, the crunch away to a gravel drive, and it's almost as if he goes, here's the concept, here's the setting, now let me take you to the reality. And then we find the, it's interesting, the puppies from a pack of stray dog, from this stray dog, and behind the fire station, and it's almost like, a secret, another secret rite, and the idea that you get one, and, you've always wanted one, except the mother says, not in my house, and there's a guy on TV now, and a morning show, that keeps talking about, I'm trying to convince my wife to let me have a dog. It's great. And I find myself following that with more interest than probably all the rest of the news of the day. He said whether or not he's ever going to be successful at getting a dog into the house. And that last verse is so poignant because it speaks to not just the child wanting to have a little piece of a dream, but to how many of us are still looking for a way to have that little piece of something that we never could quite bring into our own lives. It's a really striking piece because she does it in a storytelling style, and like you say, like that sense of coming from a middle of a novel where, like, you don't quite know how you got into the story, but boy, it's definitely a story you want to know more about by the time you're done. Very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you very much. Bobby, take us home with this one.
It's very touching. I liked her spin on the boy with the Tupperware hair.
Yeah.
Which means it just sticks out all over the place. But it is difficult with such a short piece to engage your audience with your characters as quickly as she has done. But she's got it right here. She's the just her description in the front. You've got to, like, I want to know more about this kid, and children of neighbors gather behind a volunteer fire station and divvying out the new litter of a stray pack. And you've seen that. And how many of us as children brought home the stray dog, the stray cat, please let me keep it, you know, but and with my, unfortunately, the strays I came home with always had collars on them and tags, and my father was very good about finding the owners. So, this is, yeah, and here's that edict of do not bring another dog. And all he sees, the parent sees a filthy mutt, the child sees love. He sees something that he can bestow all his love on. And it's strange, but when I got to the end of this poem, I immediately had flashbacks of something I hadn't thought of in decades. And when I was about, I was preteen, 10 or so, my parents, he had this one pet shop they always used to like to go to, because my dad had an aquarium. So while he was picking out fish that would die later, I was looking at the dogs. And there was one there, and it was an apricot poodle puppy. I wanted that dog more than life itself. And I remember begging and pleading and just trying every argument I knew, and I did not get that dog. And I remember nights, long after, crying myself to sleep because I'd fallen in love with that dog and I wanted him so much. And I still remember that dog and how much I wanted it. And it's just one of those things that you just, it hits you in your childhood and it stays with you for the rest of your life. And he wants even just a little piece of this dog just to be able to name it. This is a very touching piece, very, very human.
Amazing, amazing comments. Thanks, guys. All right, we're going to continue on. We have one more from our last contest. Tom, if you can give this a read. It is by Mike London, called As Helen Before Me.
As Helen Before Me by Mike London. She has gone untouched by man. Her mother scorned the gods, and so she has been murdered for her mother's transgressions. She shall be a witch meat indeed, because she meditates on her mother's wickedness. Forgive me my fears, for it is my mother's head I would offer to soothe Theta's wrath. Forgive me my pursuit of drunken suitors. For their bacchanalian worship I plotted my escape. Forgive me my exploitation of their knotted hands and tightening breeches, bidding them to drink so they pass out at the Lord's tables. Forgive me for abandoning your son, the one that shall save me and solve the enigmas of Riddle Maker. I have been the ruler of many men, as Helen before me. No more shall I inhabit their ivory designs or force myself to resemble their sculptures. Every man another version of the statue-loving Pygmalion. No longer shall I subsume myself to their desires and their petitions. Let them fondle some other wench. It is not my will to entertain such political matches. My own womanhood has subjected demands of brutal, conniving lords. Cast them aside, your communion wines. Tonight I go with a fool, pretending I love him as much as he loves me. Ah, there, right of their crimes, those that drove me to his arms, I shall be chief among their accusers, a herald demanding justice of priests and patriarchs alike. By their own words, I will damn them. I shall escape their nets and go beyond their cruel reach. I shall expose their folly and their lust. Though poets and priests will challenge me, I will not be silent. I lost my place. Oh, silent. Though they be in league each with each, I have been stripped naked and exposed to the man ordained to love me. Now I shall expose them, the whole God-accursed lot. I have served as their chattel long enough. I have been handmade for as long as I can stomach. What I say, none would dare utter or even contemplate. Those who have known happiness, I am without guard against judge or jury. I've only known subjugation, my body their own. I was given without consent a body desirous to men. Lords and leeches alike coveted me, but when I am old, I will be unwanted. I am as Helen, the woman that launched 1,000 ships. It is now in these dark chambers of the mind, away from the forces of their desires, from the light of lord and would-be defiler of the marriage bed, I feel myself blameless, a simple girl with books before me, no tale of God or riddles touching more than my imagination or clouding my so-called destiny. They are gray-faced. Fearfully, they prepare for the visitation of death, wandering. The rivers are dry, though they mutter wrote magic to bring back the mighty waters. Her breasts shall soon be unadorned by either lover or child, or darkness will soon arrive.
Great job, Tom. That was an epic poem, and you nailed it. Great job. I mean, really amazing. What an epic poem. I just thought it was so beautiful and captivating. Bobby, let's go to you.
Well, I noticed something about it that the same remark has been made about my writing, and as I'm listening to Tom read, I'm thinking, this is a woman talking. And I thought, well, yeah, he should have been a woman reading it. But then I looked, and the author is a man.
Yeah.
But he has done it with such skill. He's been able to place himself squarely in the soul and body of the woman in his writing. And this is quite remarkable. I think you and I have talked about that because I do that quite regularly. It mystifies you. But he has done this with such power and such feeling, and there's no ambivalence about it. It doesn't sound like a man writing. It sounds like a woman. And actually, in the context, the classical references, I found myself starting to think with the way the lines are reading, the spoilers of the marriage bed and what have you, and them wanting to make them or make her their own. I kept thinking of Penelope, who was Ulysses' wife, who was left behind, and when Ulysses had been gone for so long. She was besieged by suitors who kept saying, look, he's dead, choose another husband. And she did not want to do that. One of her tricks was she was weaving a tapestry, and she would tell the suitors that when the tapestry is finished, she will choose. And she was weaving the tapestry during the day and then unweaving it at night, unraveling it at night. But then finally, Ulysses shows up and she makes the suitors. She says that their test is to take her husband's bow, to string it, and to send an arrow through a row of axe heads. And none of the suitors can string the bow. And of course, Ulysses, who's back from wherever the heck he was, strings it, shoots the arrow through through the axe heads, and then proceeds to just dispatch all of the would-be suitors. But I kept thinking how here she is with all of these men pressuring her to choose another husband, and she stood her ground. And this piece made me think of is Penelope.
Amazing. Yeah, no, there's a lot going on here. Tom, you did a fantastic review. If you want to give a quick comment, and then we will get to our new contest.
Well, I thought that the real sort of pivot on which this whole thing runs was summed nicely when she said, the business about you design me for this body that, in a sense, isn't me, that, you know, it's hoisted upon me. I was given without consent a body desirous to men. When I get that line, I sort of like, oh, yeah, this is what the center of the whole thing is, because she speaks, you know, as if she was, you know, Helen of Troy. How everything, the behavior of all the men and all the blame they heap upon her for their own behavior centers around this one idea that they don't lust for her as much as they lust for her. But, you know, for what sort of...
She's a goal. She's an achievement.
And I think it's fascinating how she, you know, she speaks about how being a woman and being, you know, desirous as Helen before me, I am forced into actions that I never asked for. You know, I didn't ask to be your servant. I have served as a chattel long enough. I have been handmaid for as long as I can stomach. I mean, this is the spirit of a really strong woman finally saying, you know, enough is enough. All your BS, for lack of a better term, has reached the point where I'm no longer willing to play the game. I'm no longer willing to participate in something that never serves me or is never truly about who I am, but it's only about you finding ways to consume people, to take care of your own lusts, your own desires, your own needs. The selfishness I'm confronted by is insufferable. That and the other line she uses, which lords and leeches alike coveted me, but when I am old, I will be unwanted. I mean, that's just catching those points about the vacuousness of men in many ways, so pointedly and so right on the money.
Absolutely, yeah. No, this is an absolutely beautiful poem. I love this to pieces. I really do. All right, cool. We are now on a new contest. Bobby, if you want to give a brief introduction, as we are already 33 minutes into the show and we're just starting our new one. We've only gone through three poems so far, but they've been epic.
And having a marvelous time.
Okay. Absolutely having a marvelous time, and then we'll get going with the new contest.
Okay. Well, let me. I just managed to close that tab. Hang on a second. It's like I'm not all together there tonight. Okay, here we go.
No problem.
Let's long way around the barn here. Here we go. Nope, that's the wrong one too. Okay. Come on, Breeden, you can do this. Washed my hands, can't do a damn thing with them. Here we go. Okay. We have the dreamlike digital images of Katrin Welchstein. And this was this artwork I found. I should have put about the artist by the artist. I'm going to put that little note in there because when I can find a bio that's written by the artist, I'm gratefully plugged that in there because there's no better way to find out what's on the artist's mind than when the artist shares your thoughts or their thoughts with you. And she always liked to draw, and then when she always liked fantasy books and fairy tales, which I understand that completely. It was an obsession of mine as a kid, and she has taken those passions into digital imagery, and she collects old illustrations and old images, and she photoshops them together, and with remarkable results. Some combinations are a bit startling. Some are just mind-bending. I mean, it's like the first prompt, I will tell you, everybody gravitated toward that first prompt of the sail with the face on the front. There were so many submissions to that. But I could see where that would generate a lot of inspiration, but there was a lot to work with through her artwork, and it has that vintage look to it that I thought was absolutely charming. But we had a whole and I will disclose a little secret that there was so much in her body of work that the only way I could actually figure out what to include in the contest was divided up by color palettes. And because there was so much, it was all beautiful. So I went by my primary instinct as an engineer and used color coding. I will sneak a little hint here that you will see her work again in a contest right around Valentine's Day. And I'll drag out all the pinks and reds and throw them out there and let people have a good time with them. So,
excellent.
But she's got
excellent.
So anyway, with that, there we are, and I did put that note in there that I was trying to devise a way to work with her volume of work. So anyway, you will see her again. I hope everybody liked her, but they seem to be responsive to. So with that, let's get the ball rolling.
Absolutely, yeah. Let's get cranking here, and I will read the first one. This is by A.R. Mundell. It's called "Gifts of My Kingdom." Excuse me, a little pause to cough there. All right. Gifts of my kingdom. A piece of my kingdom, a gift to you, so that you might breathe its air and live there too. Just a small fragment to fit in my palm, till tower grows back to its place on my arm. Anxiety snakes as it's taken away. Well wish it's in its trail. Dog the rest of its days. And every new piece, broken birth to the world, shakes palace foundations where fed thoughts lay curled. A slight greener banner, a crystal-turned font, book spines now unbended, new knights on its mounts. My kingdom gets richer, so its coffers flow free, bestowing its wealth of fertile fantasy. That elixir of life flowing down through its streets, imagination pooling to form pristine peaks, with spiraling inclines and railings and feet, clothed in bright dresses to take their new seat. I break off some forest grown out of my face, and corn-twined bamboo growing up in its place. Soft roses blooming, adorning my sleeves, each petal gifted, till there are just leaves. The leaves turn to boats, and my sleeves turn to sea, drifting through arches long cut out of me. The towers turn lighthouse, and form beacon stars, calling new chaos to nest where they are. They anchor their notions to isles of fairies, where light paper cranes whiffle down through the trees. Some still sail the oceans, blown out on a breeze, finding their way to other wild seas. Dinghies sail facing the place they were born, sky-surfing whales or a shell with a horn. Who was formed by the waters of another's words, yet yearns for the one whose tide is still heard. Sometimes they're plucked and then dropped on a lake, patient to see if the alliance will take. Often they're wanted and welcomed within. Through times they were blown back, but now starved, sickly thin. A swan must be nurtured, the spires regrown, mountain cabin recradled, and the stars be resown. Through the sureness is knocked, so I'm loath to part ways, my favorite creations locked in cages to stay, committed to paper but still shut away, for something is lost with each piece gone astray. So I cling to my seahorses, merge with my barks, bow tie my moons, and hang them there in the dark. I keep my birds tethered to my bushels of hair, trees and growth vibrant to keep them all there. But eventually the snarls fall out with the fall, and my ribbons smooth flat, releasing them all. The birds fly to realms of you or of him, and I hold my book open, hoping they'll not sink, but swim. End poem. I'm going to just talk about the technicality of this. Not only was this rhyming and beautiful rhyming, and the just the pace of it was perfect. She used 27 prompts on this and combined them together to really make like a story. I mean, technically, this is just absolutely amazing and extremely inspiring to me. I read the poem and I was like, okay, this is great. And then when I saw that at the end, I just was really blown away by that. I mean, she, like I said, not only did a whole bunch of prompts, but made them a whole together. It was really, really well done. And it was beautifully written as well, too. I mean, just, it wasn't even just technically good. It was just so fun to read and such great imagery. So I really had to just comment on that. Fantastic job, Amy. And I'm going to go over to, let's actually go to Bobby. Bobby, what do you think? Did I lose everybody?
No.
Bobby.
Yes, I was
Bobby
being brilliant.
There you go.
After I read it, I could not. I commented it was a truly remarkable pastiche of such a large number of diverse prompts and the glossary that the author included in the author's note was a tremendous assist when it came to following the composition's construction and the storyline as well, because it's wonderfully imaginative interpretation of many prompts, and it's artfully woven into this beautiful cogent story. It's a bit of a flight of fantasy, but it's very entertaining reading. It's very skilled penned.
Yeah, every time I read poems like this, I mentioned earlier I had a book out. See Dick Run compared to some of the stuff I see on here. Every time I read these things, I'm like, I feel like the Beatles when they saw Hendrix. I'm like, I give up. I can't do things like this. It's amazing composition, really, really inspiring.
Yeah, it is.
Tom, your thoughts?
Well, when I first read this, before I get back to, her list of all the different prompts and stuff, I was reminded of an LSD trip. the way each fragment plays, each verse plays off the next verse, the way the imagery is never static, constantly shifting and changing, so that if you're not paying close attention, you get lost really quickly and find yourself going, what are we talking about? Where am I and what just happened? And she does it really beautifully in the way that she pulls the pieces in and out, so that while there is a purpose and direction to what she's saying, about what she's offering and about how you have a place here and how everything that you can want is here, she does it in a way where things are very liquid and things come to you almost as if you're in a fairyland within some magical ocean where each current is tickling your awareness and never allowing you to fixate too long on any one thing. It's a beautiful demonstration of imagination and a mind that it won't allow itself to stand still.
Well said.
Yeah, this is well said, absolutely. Amazing, amazing. Okay, and we are going to Bobby here, and you get the pleasure and honor of reading one of Naomi's poems. And this is the prompt number 48 for anyone following along.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I've managed to lose myself again. Hang on a second. What is this?
That's
my
okay.
Brain. It's taken a sabbatical today. It says, no, I hurt all day. I'm not working tonight. Okay. There we go. All right. What in the world? Okay. Let me refresh. Oh.
Should be there, I think.
Yes, through the miracle of modern technology. Here we go. And this is called Letters. We used to write each other letters, encyclopedias of our love. Today, a trickle of blood makes its way out of me each time a silent vowel dies at the end of the words, alone and invisible. You look at me like a pinprick. Your flinty eyes cut my wings. With silence sealed between us on a war footing. We eat our soup, tomato and alphabet, heads down, swallowing our red letters, all our words lying in bulk and rotting in the pit of our stomachs. End poem.
Great read. Yeah, when I read this, I thought she originally, when I first read it, I thought she was going towards more how we don't write anymore. We don't read books anymore. But then she went into this relationship, and it was really beautifully done. Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I like the way she starts to used to write each other letters, encyclopedias of our love. It reminds me of an old Loving Spoonful song called "It's Not Time Now." Where the whole song is, you just find a way to start really communicating again so we can stop having these arguments that go at nowhere and serve no purpose except to pull us apart. And she catches this silent seal between us on a war footing. So we eat our, our soup, tomato, and alphabet. I like how she plays it. So they're different, We do the same thing, but for different reasons, and we refuse to find where the commonality is, only where the differences are. As she keeps pulling things apart, and it's very nicely done. Kind of a silent file dies at the end of the phone and unthinkable. It's just very striking piece of a very, very nice, subtle imagery that kind of lingers in your thoughts and seeps into your vision of the universe. It's those kind of poems. Delicious.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been with my wife over 30 years, and we still enjoy each other's company, still laugh and go do things, and I'm lucky that way. And not only do I, do I do that just because I like being with her? But I think it's I always think my son's here for him to put in to see what kind of relationship he should go for. You want your kids to see that kind of thing. But unfortunately, what she's describing here happens in a lot of relationships. And she did a beautiful job describing it. But that does happen a lot. Bobby, your thoughts?
Oh, it reminds me of a song from the 80s. I believe it was. Streisand and Christofferson, you don't bring me flowers anymore.
Yep.
And it had sort of the same flavor that you don't touch me anymore. You don't communicate with me anymore. I think it's one of the sadder things in life to see something that started out with such energy and such passion. Wither and die, and sometimes it's bludgeoned to death, and sometimes it just dies of neglect. And
yep.
Either way, I don't know which is sadder, but they're both sad. And the way she's written about it is just so poignant. And I love the way she interpreted the prompt. that I put that, I think it was the last prompt in the contest, and I put that out there at the last minute, and I thought, this is interesting. I wonder what someone's going to do with it. And sure enough, there she is. Look what she done with it. Wonderful.
Yeah, it was really unique and just beautiful. And her, you know, she has such a great mind for things like that, and really had a beautiful take on it. Cool. Excellent comments tonight, guys. Great show. Let's continue on. Let's see what we do with this one. Let's top it this one now. That's my challenge to everybody here. And Tom, you are up to read, if you don't mind. You did such a great job last time reading about Helen of Troy. You get to read Betty Page's now.
You get a channel Betty Page now.
That's right. You get a channel Betty Page.
This is read.
Go ahead, Tom.
Drifting amidst clouds, deep into blue universe, sailing melodic, past melancholy, toward my own private island, adventure awaits. I'm dangling high, dancing with shimmering stars, playfully laughing. Guiding by moonlight, guided me back to my home, where I am not alone. A place where love is, sweet to fading waterfalls of purest comfort. I'm dancing in rain, splashing, twirling in rainbows, so wild and carefree. Tropical neon, margaritas blended sweet, sipping on moonshine, embracing starlight, enchanting, luscious, divine, sensual passion.
Great read. I'm telling you, man, some of the best poets on the planet on our little website here. You know, there's such amazing stuff that goes on. But great read. I mean, this is such a beautiful piece. Bobby, what do you think?
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but Betty tends to cleave to Senryu chains. And the fact that she has taken such a rigorous refining style format and written the Senryu chain, it offers a reader an inspired interpretation of the selected prompt. It's masterful storytelling, which is an impressive skill when you consider that it's in response within the rigors of such a demanding poetic format. And she is a master, or I should say maestra, of this format. She nails it every time, and the requirements of it, that each line be able to stand on its own, that there's no wrapping around. She does it. I mean, drifting amidst clouds, deep into blue universe, sailing melodic, melancholy towards my own private island. Adventures await. I'm dangling high, dancing with shimmering stars, playfully laughing. This is an exquisite piece of writing. I've really and it is a departure for Betty's usual very very romantic, very passionate and erotic style. This is on her lighter side, and I am so glad that she entered this into our contest, because this shows a facet of her that I don't think her reading audience gets to see enough of.
Yeah, absolutely. She really is an amazing poet, and versatile poet.
And
I
love what you did with the prompt.
She really did. Yeah, there's some really inventive stuff going on with the prompts, and I think I always try to find a theme, and the theme seems to be adventure and kind of going off in places, which is really interesting. And speaking of great poets on the board, we have Pee Wee Cussin and Gray Eyes Smith. Hey, guys. Hopefully you can call in, but if not, great to have you on the board.
Great to have him there, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to move on here.
Hey, Dom.
Oh, Gray is here. Hey, Gray, what is happening?
Not a lot. How are you?
I'm great. So glad you are here. We got a party now. We had a party before, but now we're cranking in here. Now the kegs are out and the lampshades are on everybody's head. All right, cool. And I was going to read this one. I was very excited to, but I can always bow down to Gray, and I'm going to give you this one, which I really enjoyed reading earlier. If you don't mind, I just posted it. It is by Dark Knight of the Soul, called The Fantastical Flying Sperm Whale Dirigible.
Okay, thank you.
One. Yep.
In 1896, inventor Henry Gatineau created the world's most unusual transport the world would ever know. One he was certain would revolutionize travel and would forever be known as the man who created the fantastical flying sperm whale dirigible. The idea came quite by accident when on a fishing expedition he fed his bait helium. Said bait, when caught by a larger fish, caused the larger fish to rise skyward. By 1898, he'd experimented with larger fish to larger success, so confident he was that he came up with an advertising jingle. Come with me from this world, take flight, ride on my sperm whale dirigible. We'll see the world from up on high, from the clouds all the oceans are visible. Crowds gathered for Monsieur Gatineau's maiden voyages. Reporters came from far across the corners, from the far corners of the globe, as he set off from the Seine. Helium-fed kelp fed to a dozen or so mighty sperm whales, and off they rose. They were spotted sailing over the towers of London, famously photographed stopping for high tea in the Thames. But on their way across the Atlantic, something dire occurred, and Mr. Gatineau was never heard from again. Some thought he had hit bad weather. The Germans pointed fingers at the Russians pointed back, but Gatineau's men believed the whales may have belched out helium more quickly than they could take it in, and the only disaster could ensue. But they were never found again, and soon the world turned to unsinkable ships and metal dirigibles that would fail in their own right. In Newfoundland in 1903, a boy walking ashore found a decaying calling card that said, Monsieur Henry Gatineau, creator of the fantastical flying sperm whale dirigible. And the world was once again reminded of his genius. End poem.
Great read. And we got to hear Gray sing, which is how much of a treat was that? That was fun. Great job, Gray. That was awesome. And I just love this. I'm such a fan of, you know, fantastical stuff that I enjoyed this absolutely immensely. So much fun and so much inventiveness. Great job. Tom, I'm going to start with you.
This is just delightful. It's, you know, one of those sort of fantastical, masterful tales of inventive genius, totally based with fantasy, so that when you get through the whole story, you're both tickled, laughing, caught up in the madness of the whole thing, and I just thought the ending was brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely, and delightful, that's the word I was thinking about. Delightful is absolutely how to describe this. Bobby?
Yes, I thought it was wonderfully imaginative, very clever storytelling, so detail-oriented that one is tempted to Google Monsieur Henri Gatineau, creator of the sperm whale dirigible, for more information on this marvelous invention. Come with me from this world, take flight, ride on my sperm whale dirigible. We'll see the world from up on high, from clouds all the oceans are visible. It is such a clever bit of storytelling. It's inspired, delightfully whimsical, and I think it's a bloody brilliant interpretation of the prompt image. I did not see this in there anywhere, but blessings that he did. And if you look at some of his other work, he has some equally clever and whimsical pieces out there. He has a real flair and a panache for storytelling with these little little bits of information that he's provided in the prompts. I'm glad he treated us with this. It's wonderful.
Yeah, imagination is just flying around tonight with these artists, let me tell you. Cool, and great. You did a great job and got to read it. What'd you think?
Yeah, you know, I like the whimsy nature to it. And, you know, it was such an imaginative storyline, you know, filled with incredible imagery. And, you know, I enjoyed the adventure and the mystery as well. So beautifully done, Dark Night of the Soul.
Absolutely. Excellent. Excellent. All right. And I know you just read a few minutes ago, Tom, but I'm sticking with my little schedule that I have here. And I have yours up. So if you wouldn't mind honoring us and reading that, that would be great.
Excellent.
What is it? You know, I really like these pictures so much, Bobby, that I swiped about four of them. Like, I've already written a poem on another one.
I'm so glad.
Oh, cool.
Oh, I got to write this and something to that as well.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. It's wonderful to hear.
There's something very in inspiring by these about these. They sort of tickle your thinking, you know. Now this one's called Gale Force. One, it comes down to the wind. Life is rarely found trying to fit all the pieces into a puzzle where meat presents itself with the placement of the last piece. Pieces are complete in themselves. We are the mystery. Two. I kept loving my pocket, laughed when she checked all my pockets, telling me she knew I had some in a pocket just for her. Little did I recognize how empty my heart would be when her laughter abruptly filled the stillness rang in my ears. I see her in reflection. I cannot move for fear of disturbing the ocean, raising a wave that will wash away the footprints in the sand, high tides, the fruits, the rising, sails, I wait for her. The full gale, she will bring a cascade of joy raining in hurricane force round my rapturous heart. End poem.
Great read. So much passion. I always love listening to you read. Bobby, you're glad you came on tonight. You get your harem of guys here reading poems for you. So
I know.
Good thing you came on tonight.
So much testosterone, so little time.
Exactly. A great read, awesome poem. Gray, let's start with you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there is a hope at the end that the storm will carry away his pain and, you know, fill it, grounding his rapturous heart. But, you know, the loss is palpable, you know. I mean, he has this love, and then that love flutters away. And, you know, he can see her in reflections, but can't move for fear of disturbing the ocean. And then, you know, I really liked it. I liked your read as well, Thomas. You have an excellent reading voice, so excellent job.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I wouldn't have taken that turn of it, but now it's all I can see, Thomas, is the sail being that the woman that the, you know, the person's going off for or searching for. And it's just an amazing take. I didn't see it first, but it's obvious now. So great job with that. Bobby, your thoughts. Bobby, did we lose you? You mutating?
Yeah, I'm mutating again. Doggone it. I really liked your interpretation of this prompt, Tom. You tend to see things and interpretations of things that are elusive to the rest of us, and thank goodness for that, because you share them with us, and this is no exception. It I cannot move for fear of disturbing the ocean, raising a wave that will wash away the footprints in the sand. My tides driftwood, horizon sails, I wait for her. It is so it's sweet, sad, and touchingly disconsolate and soulful, and it conveys such a deep anguish and sense of melancholy that you've got the reader's heart aching in sympathy. But then you bring it, you bring us hope in the end, the rush of hope, and the closing carries such a sense of hope to it. The full gale, she will bring cascades of joy, raining in hurricane force, drowning my rapturous heart. Beautiful ending, very hopeful, especially, and then the reader cannot help but share your hopefulness. It's beautifully written, Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really, really is. Thomas, anything else that you wanted to say about your poem before we move on?
I just, this was one of those ones where I didn't know how much people would really catch on from part one, the idea that, in a sense, we're always trying to fit all the pieces in life together, and sometimes we think we have the puzzle right where we want it. Yet, if you think about it, she's one of the pieces, and the pieces are complete in themselves. We are the mystery. It's just sort of that kind of, to me, I thought I was giving away the whole secret of the of what I was really talking about, how the wholeness of love sometimes takes respecting all the parts that make up the love, in each in their own unique and special way. Otherwise, things tend to fall apart.
Exactly. What's that famous saying? Love is a many splendored thing. It's not a one thing. It's a many splendored thing, right? So, yep, there are many parts. Excellent, excellent. Absolutely. Cool. And I want to welcome Lou to the board. And maybe, is she on? I'm going to count to three. Are you on, Lou, or are you just on the board? One, two. No Lou yet. Okay, excellent. Well, she's on the board at least. Hopefully she can call in. While we are waiting to see what happens there, I posted one by Pee Wee Cusson, who is on the board, but unable to call in. He's got some guests at home, but he's listening in. And he said he was heavily inspired by the Beatles, by Ringo with this one. So I'm going to give this one a read. This is to prompt number one, called Sailing for Sanity. The SS Meriwether traveled into deadly weather. Amidst high tide we went on, a psychedelic ride. In a windswept ire we were, tossed about at sea, rocked about in the breeze quite dreamily. Capulating capes with articulating apes up ahead. If your fortune's in the ocean, you're better off dead. Sailing for sanity, starboard port. Side high tide, what is there left to see but the sea for me? Much good that we should do, sailing for sanity, me and you. All that you see, all that to see you see out on the sea. Indigenous dingoes speak dialect, lingo outside. Kangaroos and monkeys to buckle up for a ride. In worn and weary waves, of course, we fought to save, till the west winds came and sent us on our way. Sailing for sanity, starboard port side, high tide. Sail for sanity with me, you'll see, we'll be out on the sea. Me, the sea, no sanity in sea. See? End poem. I can definitely see the Beatles and Ringo on this, their type of style on this, Pee Wee. Awesome, awesome job. And I think Lou is on here. Lou, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
Well, hooray.
Hey, guys.
You.
Hello. Yeah, hi, guys. Hi, everybody.
Great to have you on, Lou. Did you? Yes.
Yes. I enjoyed listening to you read this, and I enjoyed Pee-wee Cousins' poem on that picture. One, you know, when you have to be somewhere or go somewhere and you're by yourself, and you want to be by yourself, and you have thoughts of what you see and what's ahead of you. And, you know, not always when I am in a nature or especially like by the sea, you know, I think deep thoughts. But then again, I also start thinking of things and shapes and everything. You know, I really love where, you know, he took this out where he said, what did he say? Indigenous dingoes speak dialect, lingo outside, kangaroos and monkeys too buckle up for a ride. You know, his imagery in here was just fantastic. And I like it too because I think like this, seriously, and then my mind goes into all different matters, which you guys know with all the artwork that you put up. You know, it's really enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Beatles were fun, I thought, because they had a lot of meaning, but
mm-hmm.
but they wrote a lot of stuff, as did Eric Clapton did, that had no meaning. It was just the,
mm-hmm.
the beauty of the words that fit with the song. They were just musical. And I think, you know, knowing Pee-wee's stuff that he writes, there's meaning in here. There's definitely meaning about sailing for sanity and going on a ride, and just he's got some deep meaning, but he's also just kind of writing fun imagery and poetry just that kind of
mm-hmm.
fits in there. So I think he did capture the Beatles on this, I think, as well, but also,
yeah.
you know, managed to get kind of a deep, fun poem. So great job. Gray, let's go with you.
Yeah, you know, I like the psychedelic aspect of it. It reminded me a lot of the song Yellow Submarine and by the Beatles as well. I mean, his play on ideas and thoughts is just magical. I mean, it's engaging throughout. And really carries the reader along throughout the storyline. So just an excellent write and a fantastic read as well, Daniel.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. It's great. It's a great read. And we are in full party mode now because we have Dexter on the line with us. Hey, Dex.
Hey,
holy crap.
Dex.
Hey, glad I could make it.
Hey, Dex.
Hey.
Hey, Dex. Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad I could be here.
Absolutely. And Dex, did you get to hear the poem?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was a fantastic write. I just thought it was interesting and felt like a journey that's kind of almost needed from when you just kind of almost go from being like naive as a kid into you know, figuring things out, going sailing for sanity. And, you know, once your whole, it seems like once your whole, like, reality gets broken at some point that, you know, you have to do some deeper digging and sailing, I felt like. So I just thought it was a great rhyme.
Absolutely, absolutely. And let's go with Tom.
This cat, that understanding that sometimes being able to play with language allows you to create meaning, not by parsing it and going, this says this, this can be defined as that, and this expresses this, but simply creating a feeling of a universe, of a time and a space where certain feelings, certain sensations are given freedom. And I like this because he talks about insanity, and the insanity is not the creations and the objects and all the imagery that he's talking about. The insanity is when he gets to the very end, and he speaks about the fact that when you're alone in the middle of everything, that's nuts.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, 100%. Yeah, I mean, this is just a beautiful poem, so great job. And We're going to move on here, and we are in for a treat, as always, with Gerald Green, because he has an audio for his. And hold on, let me actually... I was doing so good and posting things ahead of time, and now I'm way behind here. So now I'm going to post this. Hold on. I was doing so good. I'm so excited with all the guests. I got distracted. All right, so I posted Gerald's, and if we can get to SoundCloud, we'll listen to him. That would be great.
Ancient Sailors, written in red by Gerald Green. The men believed and paid respect to Thetis, goddess of the sea, whose 50 Nereids spread across each ocean, as forecast by prophecy. A journey without mishap proved the faithful Nereids could control each mighty wave and gust of wind, while guiding every gull and shoal. A sacrifice, however small, was made each day at dawn or noon, acknowledging dependency between the phases of the moon. Successful voyages were made in barks and boats with greater sails, but danger waited patiently, certified by maritime tales. Each sailor must be diligent, must never show a disrespect to what was greater than his might, that could endow him and protect. Thetis countered Siren's music, fostered peace and strong endurance, helping those atop the waves, with courage as a sign of reverence.
Awesome, Reed. I could listen to Gerald talk all day. Let's go with Dex. What did you think?
Yeah, this was a great piece and kind of a sailor's tale, but, you know, it really captured a strong sentiment. And, you know, I've never been way out there at sea, but I've seen videos of it where they're, like, in these, like, big tankers and they're just being tossed about in this huge, you know, vast, these gigantic waves. And I think that, you know, nobody really knows the strength of nature, you know, maybe quite like sailors. And I think that this really depicted that and the respect that you need for it. So very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've all seen those videos, and it's just like, you know, we're still little tiny creatures, and the ocean still rules. I give it that. Gray, let's go with you.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was an excellent write. You know, his talent for storytelling shines brightly through the write. You know, it carries the reader aloft. You know, I liked his imagery, and his flow was fantastic. I mean, he had an excellent flow to his read as well. So just a brilliant write, really, throughout.
Absolutely. Lou, what's going on?
Yeah, he has a fantastic voice for reading poetry. I agree. I really like this poem on mythology, and especially that ending stanza, because at that time, humans were deeply afraid of the different gods from the Greek, and she was believed to be the creator of the world, but she also was a sea nymph, and she could counteract the sirens, which I really loved that stanza. It just brought such great imagery. Thetis countered siren music, fostered peace and strong endurance, helping those atop of the waves with courage as a sign of reverence. So she would help protect them and guide them on their voyages if they showed her the proper worship. And I really thought he did a fantastic job in storytelling this mythology. It was thoroughly enjoyable.
It really was. I mean, Bobby and I judge these contests. I honestly have no idea how I'm going to do it this time. I mean, every one of these poems has been absolutely amazing. I'm all kind of blown away this week. All right, cool. And Tom, bring us home with your comment. Tom's still with us.
Am I still here? What I liked about this piece was, like I said, because it goes, the tale speaks so well to the picture. I feel the picture almost speaks back to the poem. The feeling of conversation takes the tale to another level and lets it live like a myth should. It's a dynamic explanation for how we live in awe of a world far mightier than we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comments, guys. Thank you. And Dex, you actually put one on the board. I'm going to put it up. I just can't believe that I found it and remembered to look for new poems on there, and nobody had to tell me. That's a first for me. So I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one. But Dex, I put yours up for you. If you would honor us with a read, that would be great. I did. Yes, I put it up there. Go ahead.
Okay, this is called Isolation. Dress for the moon. Starlit occasion, Sunday's best, surrounded by wilderness, alone for the highs, blinded by emptiness, shadows of life, dreamy echoes that die, a melancholy soiree in an infinite prison, dressed in fine linen, hidden where no one will find. End poem.
Awesome read, and beautiful, beautiful brevity. I really do like this picture that you picked on here. I was hoping somebody would pick this. Luyu, let's start with you.
Yeah, you know, Dexter, I really, you took this picture in such a different manner. I really liked how you personified this with, you know, sadness, somebody who is, you know, standing up on top of the tree dressed in, you know, the nines and, you know, watching the moon and the stars and where you took it, you know, right here where it says, alone for the highs, blinded by emptiness, shadows of life, dreamy echoes that die. And that is just so deeply, deeply sad. I found it sad. Your imagery was sad, but it was powerful. And that haziness in the mist and the fog that rolls in, usually during where these trees are, just deep in the sadness that you pen here. This was fantastic, Dexter.
Thank you, Lou.
Awesome comment, Lou. Thank you. Gray, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's definitely a hard-hitting poem on the subject of loneliness and despair. You know, you can feel the loneliness. It's palpable, and you're right. So excellent job communicating that, Dexter.
Thank you, Greg.
And a great read as well.
It was an awesome read. And Tom, what do you think?
This reminds me, for some reason, of the Britisher who always wears his coat and tie, or the people I remember when I was much younger, who never left the house without putting on the fedora. There are rituals that one must carry on in the face of all of the universe to show that dignity and purpose and civilization is more important and more powerful than all the wilderness and madness that surrounds them. And I love the dress for the moon, a starlit occasion, Sunday's best, surrounded by wilderness. I mean, it just gave me that sense of, you know, no matter what the circumstances, there's the right way and the wrong way to do things. I always do it the right way, kind of feeling. And that last part, a melancholy soiree in infinite, that sense that, you know, sometimes we get so caught up in maintaining our dignity or maintaining our sense of purpose that we lose sight of why we're doing it and become so caught in the ritual that the ritual owns us and speaks us, and we have forgotten what we're saying. And it becomes very, very sad. And so that last part, dressed in fine linen, hidden where no one will find, becomes almost as if they have died before their life had ended. Very striking piece.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want, do you want to say anything about your poem, Duke?
No. I thought everybody captured it, what I was going for. I enjoyed the prompts quite a bit. It was tough to choose. So thank you, guys.
Awesome. Well, thanks, everybody. And let's continue on. Liu, you have not got to read yet, and I put one up by Scott Sharp, great guy and great poet, if you wouldn't mind reading it.
Okay. Thank you. Sailing by S. Sharp. Carried on the sins of the wind, blowing at my back, solace sailed. Carried by the thoughts of eternity, alone in the shadows of yesterday, the waters calm. But my mind wanders to the sky, the clouds that come and go, the cover from the angry sun that vows to get its revenge. I am thankful, though, for the warming breeze reflecting in the waves upon my mind. End poem.
Awesome read. And let's go with Dex. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoyed this piece quite a bit. But my mind wanders to the sky, the clouds that come and go, the cover from the angry sun, the vows to get its revenge. It's just you can carry a lot of different resentment, and hatred for what's kind of happened to you, the course that you've had to take to get here. But at the same time, to be sailing is to be moving forward. So to be thankful from all of that to still be moving forward. That was a great sentiment. So very well done.
Yeah, it was. And this was, as Bobby had mentioned earlier, one of the most popular prompt by far. A lot of people wrote for it, and we had so many different takes on the prompt, yourself included, Dex, as far as just talking about either the ocean and sailing and all of that is always something that everybody can relate to, even if, like you said, you're not necessarily a sailor that's out there. You understand that isolation and that adventure. So, and his take was fantastic. All right, cool. Tom, what do you think?
There's a feeling of gentleness in this piece that really, I mean, the words almost caress to me, carried on the sins of the wind, blowing at my back, soulless sails, carried by the thoughts of eternity, alone in the shadows of yesterday, the water is calm. I mean, it's just so peaceful, and yet it's so full of a sense of there being so much larger life around me, and I am such a small part of it. And then when he goes, my mind wanders to the sky, I would just, that's the graciousness, in a sense, the feeling of the way things flow and move about us. And so when we get to the, I'm thankful, though, for the warming breeze, it's almost as if, the fact that I'm even allowed to be included in all this is a gift unto itself. And this is really, to me, is one of many songs of gratitude.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of the Christopher Cross song, Sailing, of which I have no reason to enjoy because it's literally two chords going back and forth. But for some reason, it's just so peaceful, and I enjoy listening to it. So it reminds me of that. I agree. Great comment. Liu, what are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this poem by Scott. How many times do we not find ourselves getting in a car and driving or sitting in the backyard listening to wind chimes or being on a motorcycle or being on a boat just sailing. It's just something about that alone time, you know, when we think of, like, you know, he brings out here the sins of the wind, you know, which can be literally be taken literally in our life, you know, and blowing back, just trying to adjust ourselves. And what I really liked was, you know, he talks about, you know, the yesterday shadows, how, you know, in some ways we start to calm down as we start to see the pictures in front of us that are flowing by, you know, like this, you know, the sky, you know. And also when I'm thinking seriously, I do tend to look at nature and I start thinking of something other than myself or the issues that I may be going through or the worries that I have. And, you know, there's always repercussions to the things that we do. And sometimes there's nothing we can do about it. But what I liked here was how he took the joy, the simplicity of clouds that block that angry sun. And he brought that, I am thankful, though, for the warming breeze reflecting in the waves upon my mind when that calmness just settles in and we start building a path in which way we need to go. I really enjoyed this poem.
Excellent, excellent comment. Gray, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, I like the message behind the words. You know, it's like, be thankful, be grateful that you still have another day to feel the breeze rolling on the waves of your mind and washing out the woes of your life. You know, like Lee was talking about, the nature aspect of it, you know, powerful aspect to, I think, healing and personal freedom, spiritual connection can be felt with nature if you open your mind to it and let go of what you're holding on to. So just a beautiful poem. Well read to you.
Excellent comments, guys. All right, I just put the next one up. And Bobby, you haven't got to read for a while. You get to read this one by Fabrice D.
Oh, goody.
And you get to pronounce the title. I'm not even going to try. You can pronounce that.
Are you afraid there's going to be any foreign words in there? Let's see.
Yeah.
Let me refresh here.
It's the title you get to do. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Oh, okay. All righty. Anastomosis.
There you go.
See? Onomatopoeia. Bond with gardens, mingle with forests, browse through the tree, dive to bottom, rise anew from clay, little by little, break free from soil and roots. Slowly climb the shaft, invade the frame, graft onto branches. Then in a burst of leaves, embrace space. Resist storms, decipher the suns, face day and night. Even though this is the heart of a metropolis, a lone tree, enclosed in asphalt, away from gardens, forest orphan, a tree rough-bodied, dried branches, with lengthily extinct leaves, join this thirst, join this retreat, listen to these calls. Feel under the bark, captive but invincible, the rise of sap, the pressure of buds, like tenacious dreams that strengthen our lives. Walk from tree to tree, exploring ephemeral, go from tree to tree, tracking down duration. End poem.
Great read. And actually, he says, anastomosis, in his author's notes, anatomical term designating the meeting of two vessels on the same part, stoma, communication. So, yeah, really, really, really interesting. I mean, it almost reminds me of that movie, I forget the name of it, that just spaced me, Avatar. Where he's really kind of into nature, and the trees are just so at one with all the people on that planet. But beautifully written and beautifully read. And let's go with Louie. What are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed how, you know, it's also a surgical term where you can graph things like blood veins. And, you know, what I loved here was, you know, some of us do love nature this much. We can't live without nature. We can't eat, drink, shelter, and, you know, just the love of trees. There is, you know, this is such a beautiful photograph where she's grafted herself onto the tree in love. And I love how all the foliage is like when a tree is dry and the parts of it need to be trimmed off because it didn't get, some type of disease or something happens, and it starts growing from the bottom. And I love the greenery. That's all that's growing from the bottom, because I feel like as if she strengthens its root, and it almost looks like she's grafting herself to another, to the tree that has almost a female image to it. And, you know, the love that she has for it. And I just thought this was just beautifully penned. She says it was a forest orphan, a tree, rough body, dried branches with lean deep, deep lids, join the thirst, join the tree, listen to the calls. And I do believe we need to listen to Mother Nature, because if we don't listen and she dies, we die along with her.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And, you know, what you said before about us and nature, I mean, we are nature. You know, why we've gone so far from it that we think of nature and then we think of us, but what do we think we are? We're as much nature as anything else in nature. We've just separated ourselves so much from that we think it's different, you know. And we do really need to get back to understanding that we are as much nature as any other creature on this planet, as anything else. So really great point. Awesome job. And Gray, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to ask Louie when she posed for that picture, because, you know, it's a beautiful painting of her. Yeah, you know,
I like this picture. Beautiful.
Yeah, I could see you, you know, grafting yourself to a tree. It's because you love it so much.
I do love trees.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this was what I was speaking about, Compton Blackpool, is that, you know, nature has this healing ability too. It's a cure-all, and, you know, even though it might be temporary because you have to go back into, you know, the city life after you are finished with the forest, but it gives your soul a chance to breathe and be at peace with your world around you. And, you know, in everything out there that's, you know, I mean, I believe in that even rocks give off energy, you know. They have a force to them as well. And, I mean, there's, you know, I'm sure, you know, you guys know about crystals and all that stuff. But, you know, the moss, the trees, the hillside itself, you know, everything is just beautiful in nature, so... Excellent job, Fabrice. I believe we are kin.
Yeah, you know, Gray, it was a good read. Gray, I couldn't agree with you more. Everything is energy, right? It's funny, I've been watching the show River Monsters, which is this guy going around fishing all over the world, and he was fishing in Siberia, I believe, and he was talking to this woman who channeled herself, and it was really just amazing watching what she did. I've never witnessed anything like it anywhere, and this was just on television, you know. And she really believed that every single thing was a spirit, and everything is energy, you know. I mean, you know, the door that I'm looking at myself, it's all just atoms and energy, you know. So I'm right with you on that, Gray. Absolutely. Dex, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I agree with everything that is said, and it's also, you know, kind of goes back to my opinion to being kind of a sad poem of isolation, because, you know, talk about like a stunted existence. You know, it's like it seems like it's about a tree that's like one of those ones that they plant just for as decoration, like in a parking lot, you know, and it just, you know, there's a certain sadness that seems like it has to me, you know, because like you said, if trees do have a little bit, are a little bit deeper and more alive than we even give them credit for, this is a hell to be put in, you know. So I thought it was very well done.
Excellent, Dex. Thank you. All right, we have our one and only sound. Oh, sorry. I totally forgot. Yes, go, please. Sorry.
No. I would rather
I'm losing
have
track. That. It's getting late.
What's
I'm
that?
Getting sleepy. I'm losing. It's getting late. I'm getting sleepy. I'm losing track of my my list of people here. So sorry, Bobby. How can I forget? How can I forget the host?
I'd like to comment since I read. I just wanted to comment since I didn't have the pleasure of reading it. I thought it was absolutely marvelous. Wonderfully creative interpretation of the prompt. It not only chronicles the development of the tree from the seed to branches and leaves, it also brings a flavor of mythology because when you look at it, it reminds me of the tale of the mythology when Apollo pursued the virgin Daphne. She was frightened and she ran from him. She begs the earth goddess Gaia to protect her. So Gaia then receives her and changes her into a laurel tree to keep her from Apollo. And that's what that reminded me of is she's seeking a sanctuary with the tree in the tree. And Apollo ends up just making a laurel wreath from one of her branches. But that's what it reminded me of. And it also it personifies the tree because he talks about it being an orphan alone in the city. And I agree with the opinion of I feel sorry for plants that are planted in parking lots and things like it's like my neighbors, the ones that used to live next door to me. They used to incarcerate their plants by putting all patio pavers around each and every one of them. I felt so sorry for their plants. plants and cats. So, but this, I really enjoyed the way he interpreted this, the prompt and the storytelling, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, a couple of things you said there. I'm really glad you said about the mythology because I got the exact same thing. I thought he was creating kind of almost a mythology. Mm-hmm. And you're right about the trees. I mean, I live mm-hmm. in the city, and we are having droughts here, and I see the ones that are more in lawns or out in the woods that are doing much better than the ones that are on the street. They're just – you can see how just stressed they are from the drought more because they're having to go through concrete and sewers and trying to find different places to get water. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I agree. It's tough. Excellent comments, guys. All right. So, again, we have our final SoundCloud of the night, which is Rubicon by Art Junkie. If we could get that played, that would be great.
Rubicon. The field was peaceful and silent when the undefined line was crossed. Hell-bent words, bare-backed and frothing like Roman war horses across the river, intending to sack the city, my unguarded heart. Hooves trampled flowered plains, powdered pollen hung gold in the sun, kicked up with the dust and danced in rays of sunlight and bars of shadow, fought and fell together in gray ash, the aftermath of wildfire. Where once was beauty, now there's barren. The eyes I had for you have grown dark, sockets devoid of flame or expectation. I've been made a stupid fool in the cruelest of ways, felt the stab of it vault my rib cage rising in the din of laughter from friends. My chest heaved heavy articulations, but could say nothing sharp. These broken pieces sheathed a dull blade that lost all its cutting. Love's hot living breath turned cold and sour in my throat at its unexpected death. Murdered, it rotted in the space of an instant, picked over by a crowd of crows on the blackened meadow, this virtual place. A white linen moon will be my sheet, stitched to plush black velvet tonight. Sleeping dead on flowered beds, brand of your name cooling scarred on my skin, and the hiss of winds promising rain. And when I rise again with the sun, I will be changed.
What a beautiful read.
That was a great read by Art Junkie. I don't think I've ever heard her voice before, but Yeah, absolutely. She was great. It's funny. I didn't get that from this painting. I actually got the sense of harmony between humans, civilization, and plants and so forth. That was how I read it, and it's just interesting to see all the other different interpretations of that. But let's actually start with you, Bobby.
Oh, all righty. I really enjoyed this. First off, marvelous read. I mean, a wonderful, wonderful reading voice. There's a sadness to this piece that, like you said, you look at you. But you know, this is why we do this. You can look at this as a harmony between a man and structure or civilization. Or you can look at it as this woman shouldering the burden of this society and the civilization. Hooves trample flowered plains, powdered pollen hung gold in the sun, kicked up with the dust and danced in rays of sunlight and bars of shadows. This is it's beautiful. I mean, the way the visual imagery is so vivid, and the transition from part one to part two is very interesting, and then three, it's almost like it's three stories that have been woven into each other, and I really like the way she's done this.
Yes, absolutely. It was really, really beautifully done. Dex, what do you think?
Yeah, this was an incredible piece that had a lot of amazing lines throughout it. Each stanza, like I said, like I don't know if Bobby said it, but it felt like it could just stand alone. Love's hot breath turned cold and sour in my throat at its unexpected death. Murdered, it rotted in the space of an instant, picked over by a crowd of crows on the blackened meadow, this virtual place. I mean, it's just incredible, and it has this this kind of classical, almost Greek, Greek tragedy almost feel to it. It's just a very, it's just an incredible, right? Amazing piece.
Thank you, Dex. Gray, what do you think?
Yeah, I really liked it. You know, it had an excellent flow to it. Her read was really beautiful as well. And, I liked the imagery of war in the beginning, the loss of love is powerful. You know, it really hits home, very heart-wrenching. But, there's hope at the end where she says, in the hiss of winds promising rain, when I rise again with the sun, I will be changed. So, beautiful poem on the subject of
absolutely.
Love and loss.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, like I said, I never heard her voice before, but another voice I could listen to all day long. Great read that she did. Lou, what do you think?
I thought she had a wonderful voice for reading poetry. I really like where she took, this image. You know, you just never know what you're going to get when people write. I like how she... The point of no return, that somebody that's had their heart broken and especially has to watch their kingdom and protect their people. And, you make hard decisions, it's just, it says the hooves trampled flower plains, powdered pollen hung gold, and the sun kicked up the dust and danced in. The love that she felt, whoever this person was, and how he treated her, left her barren, and just, it just, my heat heaved in heavy articulations, but could say nothing sharp. These broken pieces shattered a dull blade that's lost all its cutting. When somebody just keeps cutting and cutting, and you try to accommodate them, but it just comes to the point where you just say, no more. Not only do you have to protect yourself, you have to protect your beliefs, You have to protect, you know, your people. And to me, her holding out that one tower and the birds being free to me is that now she understands her duty or self-protection, and she will only now expose so much of herself, and now she's free. I just found this fantastic because you do learn. When you're hurt and loved, you do learn. You know, the cooling scars on my skin and the hiss of wind's promising rain. And when I rise again with the sun, I will be changed. And you can see that here. And I just thought this was just powerful as it was deliciously satisfying.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a little taken aback by the poems tonight, to be honest. They're so amazing. I mean, there's just some incredible rights, and this is certainly one of them. Great comment. Okay, we're going to continue on here. And again, my brain is getting a little tired, so I don't think we have heard from Gray in a little bit. If you want to read this one by Weaver, who I'm going to quote on her little, I thought it was kind of funny. I think we all know Weaver, and her description, it says, although I may seem all that is flower, power, and mellow, I'm mad, bad, and dangerous to know. I just thought that was a funny quote by Weaver of herself.
Yeah, she's got a sense of humor, for sure.
She does. Yeah, but if you would like to read this one, this would be great.
I'd be happy to, sure. Days of yore. There was a time, many years ago now, when in a blink of an eye came the realization that a quill pen, some ink and linen paper shared the aspirations of mankind, but slowly. Driven words cascaded, but were still outrun. Now, when millions of words per second buzz along the information highway, it's old news. In an instant, each thought is nullified, dead. We need to return to a gentler time when we could breathe slowly, speak softly, and embrace those tales of yore, read at bedtime, now forgotten, locked in trunks. Look in trunks, check on shelves, they will be there. End poem.
Great read. And I really enjoyed this picture a lot. I'm glad that somebody wrote on this one. Let's go to Dex. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great write, really kind of capturing his modern times about just the how fast that we live and really the appreciation. I think it just dwindles the appreciation that we have overall for life. Everything goes so fast. You know, it's like one minute everybody's saying rest in peace, this person, they're dead. Next minute they're never talked about again. I mean, it's just everything kind of comes and goes so fast. It's just incredible. So I thought that this was a very well thought out piece.
I agree. I think we've talked about this on shows before, but those tales of yore at bedtime, now forgotten, look in trunks, check on shelves, they will be there. In fact, I think we did talk about this last time with Liu, where I'm very nervous about books. I see them going away. I go to used bookstores all the time, and they get rid of the books that they can't sell. And I don't worry, but I'm saddened by, I think, a lot of stories and a lot of that type of entertainment that will be lost. You know, it's just everybody is more concerned about how many Netflix series that, you know, keeping up with the latest Netflix series as opposed to, you know, taking the time and taking a week or so to read a really good book, and maybe even reading it a second time and talking to people about it and maybe taking a long walk and thinking about it as opposed to just kind of, you know, whipping through, skipping commercials and getting through the, you know, five series in one evening. I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's what we are in life. Anyway, Maybe I'm just an old man now. Gray, what do you think?
I really liked it. I mean, you know, when you can't feel the words, when you can't feel their essence and their power, that's a sad thing. And I think we've kind of gotten there in a lot of aspects in our life, you know, like she said, with the internet highway, the words are just buzzing by and lost in an instant. So, a wonderful, right? Beautiful to read it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, now when millions of words per second buzz, you know, which really is how it is, which is one of the reasons why I love the shows that we have here, is that we take the time to really read, you know, these works and think about them and discuss them, and you know, how much is that being done now. Liu, what do you think?
I really thought that she captured the image with her poem. I love where this took her, because, you know, it just, you can just see all, you know, she talks about how, you know, for the longest time, the quill pen or some ink, a linen paper, you know, the things that we used to communicate with, everything was written in letters. Even notes were passed and folded into lockers. And you never passed a note in class, because if you did, the teacher would read it out loud and humiliate you, you know. And now we've got, like, Dexter mentioned it earlier about, you know, this modern times that this information highway just tends to, you know, not everything that you read is true. So, you know, you do need to go fact check, okay? Even though we have information that's just zooming in front of us, doesn't mean it's the truth. You know,
wait,
and
wait
then
a second.
I really,
if it's on
like
the internet, it's true, isn't it? Isn't that how, if it's on the internet, yeah, it's true. That's how I thought, Lulu. I don't know what.
Yeah, well, now we know it's not. You know, I remember going to the libraries and, you know, having to get books and check and fact and footnotes and everything, and now it's just both guts. But, you know, I really love the last stanza, because, you know, that is something that, you know, I think it's embedded where our grandmother read to us, our mother read to us. You know, I read to my grandmother when she was dying. You know, it's just, there's just something about holding, you know, I love books. I love holding them. I like opening them. I like the way it sounds when you put your, you just caress the page and you go to the next page and you fold it over. There's just something about books. And she is right. People throw them in the trunks, on the shelves, they're there, but do you use them? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you are right, though. There's just so much. I mean, anybody, I have a website. Anybody can have a website, you know, and put whatever they want out there. And there's so much just information. And I mean, it's a little scary what can be out there and what people follow.
Exactly.
It's definitely scary, Lou. You know, it really is.
It is.
Cool. So we only have a couple of minutes left. So, Bobby, if you want to make a quick and then maybe get us going, talk about the next one for
yes.
Rose Winter 5, Swan Song,
oh,
June
yes.
Johnson, and EJ Cool. We will read yours next week. And Bobby, not next week, the week after our next show. And Bobby,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, first off, I want to thank everyone who shared their evening with us. This was wonderful. This was quite a party we had this evening. I could get spoiled like this. So thank you all so very much. And afterwards, everyone over to my place for coffee and scones. So,
you got it.
Yeah. But, you know, so we have with the closing of this one, and I pity the two of us, you and I, Dan, the judging on this is going to be an SOB.
That's
a tough one. So good. And it just seems like we say that with every contest, and every contest the stuff just keeps getting better and better. But and thank you for everyone who said that they really enjoy the artwork and the prompt, because that's what I'm looking for when I go out there looking for these artists, is to introduce you to something that will be provocative and inspirational and interesting and just and give you a shot at something that you've never seen before. And speaking of which, the next one, this fellow has such a large, another large body of work. But since we're riding right on the shoulders of October, and we all know what comes in October, Halloween, and we poets go a bit mad in October, and wonderfully so. Anyway, this fellow, Andrew Ferez, we have the surreal storytelling of Andrew Ferez, part one, and that's out there right now. We only have one entry, but it's a very good one. We have the and what we're going to do is for the remainder of September and the beginning of October, we're going to have this is going to be not a two-part contest, but just a contest with two portions to it. So you get we'll have the surreal storytelling of Andrew Ferez part two, and you'll get some more of his work. Now, if you write to one contest, you can write to the other. I don't care. You know, do both, do either, do neither, whatever. Anyway, it's creepy. It's very dark. And for you folks that like it on the dark side out there, you're going to love this guy. And for Halloween, I give you a little peek. Halloween's artist is going to be Anne Bachelier. And she's an American artist, but she has done a series of artwork pieces for The Phantom of the Opera. So our feature, the contest for Halloween, and our broadcast is going to be on 29 October, but it's going to be artwork by Anne Bachelier, and it's Phantom of the Opera, and even our intro music is going to be Phantom of the Opera. So, and it, she has got some gorgeous stuff out there. And matter of fact, I've been while we were reading, I was working on putting the contest together. So I hope you guys are as excited about it as I am. And afterwards, we'll get some more of her stuff out there. But anyway, thank you again, everyone. Thank you, Dan, for taking up the slack for me. You guys are magical. My headache went away.
Yeah, thanks everybody. Aww. Have a fantastic night. Great
show. Yeah, thanks everybody.
Love you guys. Had a great time.
Good night, everybody.
Have a great night, everybody. Take care.
Good night.